Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
And welcome on in to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
I'm Cherry Gregg. The fireworks and parades are almost here to ring in the nation's semi-quincentennial and Philadelphia's starring role in our independence. But today, we're looking further ahead to the next big celebration, the tricentennial, when America turns 300.
Now, this is our monthly Big Fix Hour, where we like to tackle big solutions to big problems. But today, instead of solving a problem, we're going to ask a question, okay? How can we set Philadelphia up to thrive for the next 50 years? As always, we've brought together three very smart people. Each of them have ambitious visions for Philadelphia and the region. And we've asked each of them to pitch two bold ideas for transforming the city and then explain a little bit about what it would take to pull it off.
Yeah, and we want to hear your ideas and your plans for Greater Philadelphia. So from the Delaware waterfront to the parkway, from the Stadium District to Market East, across all our parks, schools, skyscrapers, museums, and neighborhoods, how can we set Philly on the right path? And what's the one big project that could change the city? How do you think we should redesign Philadelphia for the future? So that gives you some fodder for thought, right? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, share the video, but you can leave your comments and ideas in the live chat.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you this hour. Yes. 888-477-9499. Do you think Gritty will be a robot?
I don't know.
Will be a drone? What's going to happen in the next 50 years? Okay,
big ideas.
Studio 2. You don't think those ideas are big?
Those are big.
Okay.
Those are big for 50 years, yeah.
Studio Why 2 not? at WHYY.org is the email. Now let me introduce our panel. Gregory Reeves is CEO and co-founder of Mosaic Development Partners. Greg, thanks for being here on Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
Catherine Ott Lovell is the president and CEO of the Philadelphia Visitor Center. Pretty busy time, Catherine. Thanks for lending us some of yours.
Oh, happy to be here, guys.
And finally, Harris Steinberg is the former founding executive director of the Lindy Institute for Urban Innovation at Drexel and a fellow of the American Institute of Architects. Harris, thanks for joining us inside Studio 2.
Great to be here.
And so let me just explain to you quickly how the Big Fix series works. We have two rounds, right? And we have three big thinkers here with big ideas. And what we'll do is we'll throw it to you. You'll each present one of your big ideas in each round, okay? And so, Greg Reeves, we're going to start with you. You're in the hot seat.
I'm in the hot seat.
And I understand that your first big idea is to make Philadelphia a 10-minute city. Break it down. Tell us what that means and how you would go about making this happen.
Yeah, well, thanks again for having us here. And it's really great to be with you both, actually, who know the city as well as anybody. The thought that I had in traveling really the world and living around the country and the world was where Philadelphia does so many things really well. Mm-hmm. It's been first for so many things as well. The 250 years have told us that Philadelphia has been the best at many, many things. And I think where it's disconnected today is in connectedness. And so the 10-minute city really means that anywhere that you walk out of your door within 10 minutes, you can get to really critical spaces, whether it's a hospital or a grocery or a park or entertainment or a value. And it's really the connectedness of transit. And so when we think about the city, we're talking about reducing the architecture of automobiles significantly. Mm. I say get rid of the streets by 40%, particularly highways.
Stealing my thunder.
Wait.
Break this down.
So you said you get rid of 40% of the road network?
Primarily, that would be 676, 95, those that intersect really the communities and the neighborhoods in the city. I would dispose of them and bring parks.
Yeah, no, I'm all in.
Wait, dispose of them entirely?
They've got to go.
How would people get around?
They get around because what we're going to do is we're going to fully invest in transit.
All right.
Because every major city and around the world, whether you're in Berlin, Paris, Madrid, they know this. They get this. These are older cities.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
But the ideas are right. And I ride SEPTA. I go North Philly, Center City. I'm on SEPTA. I'm on the sub. I mean, that's how I travel when I'm in the city. And so knowing that, just knowing what's happening here, how much we underinvested in public transit is the problem with Philadelphia, particularly when we want to be the greatest city in America. And I think we have the ability to be that, but we have to take a serious approach to reducing cars, creating this 10-minute city. And
plus, with autonomous vehicles, things are going to change in terms of how we get around.
Absolutely.
But explain that more, Harris. Break it down, how do you think autonomous vehicles play into this vision of a city with fewer roads? Because I could see the argument, you have autonomous cars, we need more roadways. These things are going to be zipping around everywhere.
Well, we'll have many less personal cars.
Yes.
Right. So you'll have autonomous vehicles stored around the city, and I, as a incipient senior, will call one to take me to my doctor.
50 years from now, yes.
Well, so my understanding is, and my sense is that, and I've seen these cars as they travel through other cities, they're going to be much more closer packed together. They're much safer. They're not going to have necessarily the distance or the accidents that we have now. So there will be an ability to shave
and
down.
Efficiency.
And efficiency. But Greg is absolutely right. The only thing that's going to do it is investing in public transit. And it, just like, I mean, he stole my thunder. That was my second big idea. So I'm completely on board. And, you know, when they develop parts of Europe, they extend transit lines. I mean, it's just part of what they do. We don't do that here. The Navy Yard, where Greg is working, the one more stop would take you to the Navy Yard on the Broad Street line. And that has languished for decades.
Yeah, right.
So we in Philadelphia and in America just have a love affair with the car and just don't get the value. We used to get the value. We put it in the commuter tunnel in the 1970s and 80s, and that was our last great kind of infrastructure challenge that had to do with
connective
exactly.
tunnel. But
correct.
Okay, so but yeah. Greg, let me get back to your idea though. It's that this idea of a 10-minute city, and you said if you walk out your door in 50
Anywhere.
Years, hopefully, you'll be able to walk. It was walk.
Walk. Train, bicycle.
Walk, train, bicycle to everything basically you need.
All of the important components of life. So that's the key. Is how do you build that? How do you build? And it's really around these neighborhood corridors. So if you say transit is the center of life, and so at every transit, they're doing that in D.C. They're building.
Think of New York.
Think New York. Think
Tokyo,
of Europe. I mean, Europe's done this really well.
World,
all the big cities have done this. This is not a new idea. It's just a new idea here.
But I'm thinking there must be some high speed transit here, so that if you live even in the farthest corners of the city, you could be able to zoom right in to downtown.
Exactly.
But you won't have to zoom downtown either, because we're building infrastructure in those neighborhoods. So that's part of the issue as well. Like, how do we really? That which is part of my second point is, how do we build and invest in neighborhoods growing out? So if you think about the city right now, it's so center city focused. Everybody's coming into center city. How do we think about a broader neighborhood strategy with a 10-minute city?
Yeah.
And transit has to be able to connect that across the city. Because you're right, hub and spoke takes us into the center, except for the buses. But rapid transit has to also get us around circumferentially.
So you got to be able to kind of move around even northeast, within northeast Philly, on a high-speed transit option for any of this really to work.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Do you have any thoughts?
I mean,
on this?
As a kid who grew up here in northeast Philly, right, and took the bus every day to and from high school, right, like it wasn't a great experience for me, right. So I didn't learn to drive until I was in my 20s, right. But when I did, you know, that's what I do now, right.
Yeah.
And I drive. I have a 18-year-old who doesn't have her license yet, and I don't know if she will get one because she finds there's no reason to drive. You know, right. I mean, she has not found a need yet to drive. I have a nephew living with us from suburban Ohio, and you know, she's taking him on SEPTA, training him, you know, how to do this, because that's how she navigates not just our city but the world. She's in school,
so
in Brooklyn,
the next generation,
and she loves it, and that is it. I mean, it is her whole world, and she sees no reason why, you know, she would ever need to drive right now, which is fascinating to me as someone who grew up here. So I think it's generational very much.
Let me ask you a quick follow-up question, Greg, because I feel like a lot of the existing transit we have to create this vision for this 10-minute city by the tricentennial, I feel like you have to really rethink a lot about where transit goes in the city, because right now it feels like it's very oriented to, you work a 9-to-5 job in Center City, I'm going to get you there at 9, I'm going to let you go home at 5 to wherever the heck you live. But this idea that Harris was talking about it being less hub and spoke, I think was the term that you used. Like, how do you go about building that so that I can do it for my daily things, not my one or two big commutes?
Right. And I think the idea is that work has to be so centralized. In the future, it probably won't be. So if you think about where people will be, they're not going to be coming to Center City.
Exactly.
They'll be where they are.
Yeah.
And so now when they leave, they're going to do things they want to do. Mm-hmm. And how do they get there? the first choice in many cases is I get in my car, right? Yep. We want to dispel that, get out of that entirely and think about what a city could be to move from that, get out of that space and go on whether, look, I'm on, when I'm in New Orleans, I'm on scooters. I don't take cars either. Yeah. I do different transit modes. And so here we need to have that that's safer. There's, it's not as safe to be in Philadelphia and use those different modalities, right? It's just not. So we have to really prioritize people over cars. And when we do that, everything starts to shift, including public transit and the investment in public transit.
Well, that was great. I loved hearing that idea.
The 10-minute city. Okay.
All right.
I want to reiterate that you can give your big ideas for the tricentennial vision of Philadelphia. Our number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat. Look a Bear on YouTube, I think, is agreeing with Greg, says, make subways, don't get rid of my green spaces, bike paths versus big roads.
People that idea. Okay. They're clapping for you.
So Catherine Ott Lovell, you have an idea here. And this is what this is what I've got in front of me. It says, make Market Street the most welcoming street in America by 2076. What does that mean?
Break it down.
So I'm on the Market East Advisory Committee. Yeah. And I've been in a year of meetings now with really smart, active, you know, active people in our city. And I think, and then we just read in the paper last week, you know, the city got like a $2.6 million federal grant.
Yep.
To begin a redesign of Market East. So, and we're coming off this incredible moment. We're in the middle of it. We've been a host city for the World Cup.
It's been great to see.
It's been wonderful.
It's been great to see. It's also for me as someone who's in that business, right? Turns out we're really good at this.
Yeah.
Like I think hospitality and hosting is our superpower in Philadelphia, right? I think not only are we good at it, we love it. We love being hosts, right? We, you know, there's 10,000 fan ambassadors out there. They're lining the streets right now. You can't swing a cat without hitting someone who is, you know, handing out a map or welcoming
people. We're good for the company. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I started to, you know, sort of connect these dots and thinking about, you know, Market East, I started to think, you know what, like this is the last piece of that connection from the waterfront out to Fairmount Park, the waterfront to the parkway, right? Like, and why don't we lean into this incredible superpower that we have of hospitality and really begin to think about the design principles, instead think about them as welcoming principles for Market East, right? And I even want to take it a step further and we got to stop trying to make Market East happen, meaning the name. We got to throw out the name Market East.
Okay.
Too much baggage?
Yeah, too much baggage.
Call it what?
It's not happening. Okay, we're going to go back to High Street.
The original name of the street was High Street.
The original name was High Street, changed in 1869 officially, but we're going to spell it H-I.
Oh, like,
whoa.
It's a high street. It's no longer a place that you pass through. Okay. It is a place that greets you immediately. High Street.
Now, okay. You change a name around here, and you're going to get some pushback.
People scream.
Nobody loves Market Street, Avi. Nobody's protesting out there.
Wait a minute. Who says we don't love Market Street? Don't tell me it's you.
Don't tell me it's you.
So I think it becomes
the most welcoming street in America. And I think that means that it is not just the economics that we're talking about. We're always talking about the economics. I think we've got to talk about the social principles that are behind that as well.
And so what would be the building blocks of making the High Street this most welcoming
section? Well, first of all of your tax incentives and subsidies, we're going to need them, right? We're going to need them to redevelop Market Street. It's you know, everybody is, I think, you know, conscious of that. I think all of those have to be tied to mandates of what developers are going to do to create access and create welcoming experiences,
absolutely,
folks, right? So that means that when you all walk down Market Street today, right, nothing is open to the public except Five Below, right?
Yes.
Sephora's closed. Primark is open. I walk the street almost, you know, 3-4 times a week, right? Mm-hmm. The Marriott is closed, right? Nothing. There's no access to Market Street. This has to be a mandate that when these blocks are redeveloped, that it's not just, I promise to put retail there. No, not good enough, right? Because that retail space is going to be vacant. And then you're going to put up a vacancy poster. Not good enough. You have to make a commitment tied to your whatever subsidy or incentive that you get. You have to make a commitment to create that space on the ground level, open and accessible to the public. Meaning
What's a
that
good
it
model
is
of that?
It is programmed.
Help
it
us
is
visualize
it is
this.
You know, yeah, yeah. I think
Greg, go ahead.
You got a visual. Yeah, Greg, go ahead.
In Barcelona, Las Ramblas, that's what we thought. Market Street could be that. If you look
at Las Ramblas, it's a pedestrian walkway, very popular in Barcelona.
And you get, again, that calls to getting cars off of Market Street.
So help us, help our radio listeners describe this.
So if you take Market Street and you remove cars, you know, maybe you have one lane going each way, and in the middle you have, like, it's commerce, it's people, it's food, it's energy, it's walking. It's from markets, it's really from, you think about City Hall all the way down to 6th Street. And that's just the center square, a place that has history, it has culture, it has statues of, for me, it would be historical Black culture. That would be great to really show in that space. But then on top of that, have commerce come out, have it bleed out to the buildings.
And culture. Bring more green commerce there. Culture.
Yeah, I was saying culture, definitely. Yep. But that would be an experience that doesn't exist in Philadelphia today that could really transform. And it will also transform the building infrastructure that's on the perimeter of those spaces.
And because we're a city that is a poor city, right? Mm-hmm. We always come at things from this frame of scarcity, right? Yeah. So we are so desperate for somebody to come in and invest in Market East, right? Instead of thinking about what do we want Market East to, what do we want High Street to become?
Oh, yeah,
what do
that's
we
right.
want High Street
speaking
to become,
into existence,
right?
Over.
I will speak into existence. What do we want High Street to become? And let's invest in that and let's attract those people to come here. Let's invest in hotels to come here. Let's invest in housing for the most hospitable people. Who are they? They are your hospitality workers, okay? They are your, let's invest in subsidized housing and affordable housing for teachers and artists and students and hospitality workers, right? And let's get them to live there and therefore you will innately make this a hospitable place for people. You will welcome people.
Here's my question. If it becomes High Street, does it become the High Frankfurt L?
Deep. Avi, I didn't go that far. Okay, you totally caught me. I'm not hating it.
Harris is looking. Do you have a comment on this?
I'm mulling.
You're mulling. Okay. You got to think about it. Let's bring in a caller while you mull.
Yes, Thurston.
Thurston from Philadelphia has, I think, an idea for the vision of Philadelphia at the Tricentennial. Thurston, you're on Studio 2. What's your big idea?
Thank you so much for having me. First, I want to thank Catherine Ott Lovell. I moved to Philadelphia. I'm originally from Philadelphia. I moved back in 1999, and I've been a City of Philadelphia lifeguard every summer ever since 1999. So I remember when she was in charge over there at Parks and Rec, and I remember being over there under her, and it was great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Thurston.
Thank you, Thurston from Philly. By the way, you can chime in.
What was the idea?
As well. Oh, yeah. Did Thurston have an idea? He said that we already have public pools and parks available to all. I think we should lean into that. Make classes free and available.
Yeah, Thurston, you're still there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, so the Parks and Rec, as Catherine knows, it doesn't matter whether you're a resident of Philadelphia or not. A lot of places like, oh, you got to live here to use our public pool. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia will let you can be visiting from any country. If you show up at a public pool, you get to come in, you get a free swim lesson for yourself, for your kids. Everyone gets to be fully involved from, the entire time a community swim. I think we should lean into programs like that, not just with the pools, but with everything, free CPR and first aid training for the community and for visitors from out of town as well. Free swimming lessons. Let's get some more indoor year-round pools, and let's do the Red Cross's Longfellow Whale Tails for all the kids in the entire city. Things like that to just make it a safer place and a funner place. Even firearm safety training.
Yeah.
Like, make that happen, because we know we've got a lot of guns in this city, some legal and some not. Let's at least make it so people are using them safely and handling them safely. And let's make all of this free. Let's invest in that so that we can not only be a safe, fun place, but it make it happen inexpensively for the community.
Wow. Thank you so much,
you
Thurston from
along,
Philly.
Catherine.
Love you, Thurston.
Yeah.
Love you.
Yeah. You changed your life there every
amazing,
summer.
No. Listen, our lifeguards are heroes. Like, people who answer the call to be city lifeguards are absolute heroes, and we don't thank them enough. So thank you, Thurston.
I love it. By the way, listeners, you can join the conversation. How can we set Philly on the right path for 50 years from now, the tricentennial? And what's the one big project that you think could change the city? And how do you think we should redesign Philadelphia for the future? 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org.
So getting back to your question about
what
I think about.
Oh, you mulled.
He's
mulled.
He's done mulling.
Harris has mulled.
I mulled. So the way I hear what Catherine is saying is we need density on Market East. I mean, that's the secret sauce to vibrant street life. you know, whether it's...
I think it's the right kind of density. I wouldn't say it's just density. It's
well, you need
right
people who are going to walk the street, who are going to buy things, who are going to attract others, who are going to sit in the cafes. You need sidewalks that are amenable to those kind of activities. You need a whole variety of types of people and interests at different times of day. So it's got to be really kind of that sort of eclectic mix, not just a monoculture. Because in the past, we've kind of, it's either been all offices or, you know, different single...
So how do you mix it up? How do you attract
I mean, the Avenue of the Arts suffers from being sort of a single-use district. So that's, in my mind, what Market East needs. Now, whether it has a veneer of hospitality over it or if it's got other kind of ambitions in terms of an identity, that's all fine.
Yeah.
But key to us, and Philadelphia has really sort of had a problem, we haven't been able to do this very successfully anywhere in our big streets, is to get that mix of uses and density that's going to bring the street life. Because once you have that, you have a successful street.
And by the way, we're coming to you now for your first big idea. And I know that yours was to build, quote, New Philadelphia.
I love this idea.
New
Philadelphia.
So break it down for us.
Speaking
tell us
of
your
name
big idea.
Changes that are going to alarm people.
As long as it's not New Coke.
Yeah. Break it down for us.
Harris Steinberg, New Philadelphia. Go ahead.
So I didn't go whole city, nor did I do center city. But I looked at what used to be the Philadelphia Energy Solutions oil refinery. It's now called the Bellwether District that Hilco owns.
This is sort of a part of South Philadelphia, industrial stretch of South Philadelphia. Yeah.
1,400 acres. Wrap your head around
big.
That.
It's huge.
Bigger than Penn's original city.
It is.
So the original city was 1,200 acres, river to river, Vine Street to south.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than that, we've got, you know, vast amounts of open space down there that are connected to waterways. And why don't we, as a, you know, first as a thought experiment and then ultimately figure out how to implement it, create a city not unlike what both Catherine and part of the city, not unlike what Catherine and Greg are saying, that really embodies the values.
And you have some specific ways that you think this area needs to be developed, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and again, what we have to keep in mind is this is private property right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the city has the ability to plat streets and determine the future form of the city once the development is actually implemented and the city decides to open streets and create parks and the like. But it doesn't stop us right now from determining the form of that part of the city. You've got a portion of the city that has direct access to University City and its burgeoning life sciences economy, the Navy Yard and its burgeoning economy, the airport.
It's sort of wedged in between all these things.
Mm-hmm. It's 5 miles of just absolute pure land that's waiting to happen.
So what would you do?
So I would do what I typically do, which is put a grid through it. Take Philadelphia and extend it down to and over the turnpike, over the expressway.
So it looks more like a normal neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And that's just the beginning. Then you put parks in there. You put trails. You put universities. You put, I mean, there it can pack in a lot of stuff. It becomes, you know, unlike just, unfortunately, the Northeast, which was just really an extension of the row house city. You want to kind of recreate what we think of it would be an ideal city for our 300th anniversary. How do you create a sustainable, equitable, inclusive, all of the kind of attributes of Philadelphia that for many years we've sort of fallen short of that promise?
It's also, and I'll note this patch of land you're talking about, it is buttressed, is bordered by the Schuylkill. And I've always been a little puzzled comparing Philadelphia to other cities that we just don't seem to have a lot of like human access to big swaths of our waterfront, even though people love water, they think it's pretty. And
we have it north of there in Fairmount Park.
Right. So the big one, right, is like the Boathouse Row area, and there are parts, but even there's big swaths of the Delaware, there's big swaths of the Schuylkill.
They're finally
that
starting,
you almost can't even really get to. Yeah. So in this new Philadelphia, would you be able to walk down to the river and enjoy the river?
Yeah, in fact, a good portion of that, those 1,400 acres, maybe almost half, are in the floodplain or susceptible to sea level rise. So the smart way to develop that would be allow the riverfront to do its thing in terms of allowing water to rise and fall and be public lands. And then to the east are slightly higher elevation where you can actually build buildings that are not going to necessarily susceptible to those climate forces. So yes, the riverfront itself, like at Bartram's, I mean, Catherine knows this area, this part of the city well as sort of the ambition and sort of difficulty in accessing our waterfronts.
Yeah.
But so many of them were industrial. I mean, this part of the city for over 150 years has been oil refineries. Soon after Titusville and when oil was founded in western Pennsylvania, this is where it was shipped to and refined and then ultimately distributed. Yeah. So we have been an oil capital, kind of Houston before Houston, but no more. So now we have the ability.
We have to redevelop and re-envision all this.
And one of the things that you pointed out here was to remediate the soil to allow for residential use, connect all these different neighborhoods, Point Breeze, Girard Estates, Packer Park, Grays Ferry, all those things. Any comments or response to Harris's big idea, Greg?
Yeah, and I know that area well. We're working at the Navy Yard. Navy Yard's 1,200 acres, if you know. Yes, so yeah. Combined, that's 2,600 acres of land.
Exactly. FDR Park is right there.
Exactly. Park is great. I go there. I play soccer there. It's a great place to be. Mm. It's a great multicultural community. I will say some of the land, and really Philadelphia, it's part of the 10-minute city as well, is to connect the Delaware to the Schuylkill. That's one of the ideas of how we do that with public space. The problem with Philadelphia is they haven't really realized to full potential is the waterfront. I think that's a fair statement
here
that doesn't exist really in any major city.
No, we've inherited, I mean, these are vast industrial, we were the industrial capital of America.
That's the workshop of the world.
Thank you.
I love that phrase, by the way.
And we had, you know, we made everything.
And then we transitioned that to putting a Home Depot on the waterfront. So.
Yeah, we got to use that waterfront. Let me read a couple comments. Ellen on YouTube says, we need more underground trains. We should be able to go to Chestnut Hill, etc. Beth says, let's put a park at 8th and Market that will rival Rittenhouse Square and make
let's
it the most covetable
Beth,
space
you.
In Philly parking lot.
She's talking about the Disney hole.
Yeah,
Disney hole. It's not really a hole, but it will always be.
What's
see?
A hole?
See, won't be a hole we call High Street.
Yeah. And let's, before we go to our next big idea, let's wedge in another caller. We have Avril from Paoli on the line. Avril, you're on Studio 2. What's your big idea for the tricentennial?
Hi, how are you?
We're great.
Good. I was a tour guide in Philadelphia, and about 2 years ago, I had a vision of a modern museum of culture, the Philadelphia Museum of Modern Culture, including inventions post, during the Industrial Revolution, like the rotating door, American Bandstand, the Rocky Ring, the history of the cheesesteak, also the hoagie, which is a wonderful story, Monopoly, all things Philadelphia, including movies, food, and everything that was invented there.
I love it.
I love that
I
idea.
Just want to know where this museum's going to go, but we'll get to that another day.
I have some thoughts on that.
New Philadelphia.
There it is.
No,
thank you so
it's
much,
Avril. On High Street.
It's going to be on High Street.
At the Disney Hole.
You guys, I love that you, the big thinkers are fighting over where the museum should go.
I will defer to Catherine.
I'm the developer, so I that's up to me.
So let me. Catherine. I'm going to get to Greg's next big idea. First, let's read this comment from Nicholas on YouTube, who says, weaning folks off of private car ownership has an additional advantage. We can house more people. Building housing without off-street parking does not work in a private car dependent town. So an interesting kind of corollary to something we were talking about earlier with Greg's first idea. Now this is Greg's second idea, and here's what it says in front of me, Greg. The Philadelphia Freedom Deal.
That
sounds great. What is that, Greg?
It's the New Deal for Philadelphia.
The New Deal for Philadelphia.
Break it down.
So I got to Philadelphia in 1984, but my wife's family's been here since the 1830s. Hmm. In 1950, Philadelphia's kind of at its peak, around 2 million people. And since that time, we've lost about 500,000 people. In the last 50 years, about 200,000. Mm-hmm. The people that have been hurt the most have been people of color, primarily black and Latino women. in this city. And the poverty rate in Philadelphia has exceeded any major city for generations. This deal is about removing generational poverty in the city, about investing in people, particularly people who are economically challenged in the city, where we're now starting to think differently about how to bring people to work, how to take the people that are here and build wealth in their lives through a new deal, through a program where we're now working with the major institutions, the world-class institutions, that we have health and education institutions that are the best in the world, they're among the best in the world, that we have a new pact with the institutions that are here to bring people out of poverty over the next 50 years and help them build wealth in their neighborhoods. And
okay,
so we do that systematically.
Okay, so this is a pact, and it involves some of the major private institutions in this city pledging, what, a certain amount of money? How does the, how
it's
this
a lens. Work? It's a different framing. It's not just how many jobs have we created? Are the streets cleaner? Which are all critically important. It's also is the lens, how are people who are in poverty winning when we invest this dollar, whether it's $100, $100 million, or $1 billion, are people coming out of poverty with this investment? Are they part of the discussion in the lens of the conversation that we're having?
So is this like a CBA understanding? Like every time there's a new development, these types of questions get asked and they have to be answered.
It becomes a natural conversation. In my company, that's what we do. Whenever we talk about how we're building, it's a second thought now that we know we're going to include people who have been historically disadvantaged in the conversation, primarily in the economics of the program as well. So our goal as a company is to build that.
So give me an example, a real world example of how a new development built under this new, this freedom deal, this Philadelphia Freedom Deal, would work to benefit this these communities.
Well, you think about the billions of dollars that are invested by major entities here. What if a percentage of them, say we want to take 100,000 people out of poverty. And in this plan, we also have to grow the city to about 1.8 million people. We don't have enough people in the city to generate the tax revenue that we need to pay for services. So we have to grow the city, but we also have to grow people out of poverty. So to move 100,000 people, just set a number, whatever that number is. Mm-hmm. Let's say the commitment from a Penn, which Penn is a great institution. Say, Penn, over the next 50 years, you're going to take 20,000 people out of poverty.
Oh, interesting.
And here's how you're going to do it. You know, they maybe it's not a pilot program because they don't take pay taxes, but maybe it's a commitment to help end poverty in this city by, when we have a job that's there, we're going to take somebody who's in the city, who's challenged economically, give them the opportunity, but it's going to be a real commitment to grow that institution. Because when we grow in those neighborhoods and those economics, I work in most of the neighborhoods in Philadelphia, you see an economic benefit to the city, not just to that family. And so those dollars get recirculated, they get redistributed within the city, and everybody benefits from it.
Let me read this comment from Katie, because I think it's sort of, there's an echo here. Katie says, my vision for the best Philadelphia in 50 years is one of abundance, and not just for those who can pay. Community gardens thriving, trees being planted, and above all, a committed, proper safety net for the unhoused, bringing several thousand people who currently suffer living out on the streets down to zero with health care and housing resources for those most in need. Multiply work being done by organizations such as Project Home. Does that sound like it would fit in the idea of this Philadelphia Freedom Deal, Greg?
So I'll just read to what I wrote. It's a place where poverty is rare and brief. Low-income residents gain assets as the city grows. Every neighborhood is tied to frequent transit and connected to public space. It's very complimentary to what that person's saying.
Any comments from our other two big thinkers, Catherine, Harris?
You know, what comes to mind is, and this is just not as aspirational as what you're suggesting, but the universities, I know Drexel has done it, is doing it, Penn is doing it, and I'm sure John Fry is doing it at Temple, but they've got, basically they consider themselves anchor institutions. They're not able to move. They're set down kind of in stone. But they've made a commitment to their community, so it's like to buy local. They've invested in public education. There's a number of programs that these institutions have implemented in the past 25, 30 years that really start to kind of get to where you're going. Now, you're saying let's take it to the next level, or even a few levels up, where it's not just about buying local and housing and a couple of different programs, but literally to end poverty.
It's truly an anti-poverty program.
Yeah. So the institutions are already in many ways kind of thinking like that. that. So how do you then?
How do we codify that? Right.
Yeah.
And so think about it this way. Philadelphia has 300,000 people that live below the poverty line. That's the size of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
That's the city of Pittsburgh.
The poorest big city in the country.
That's true. I mean, there are some that are catching us.
Houston just beat us.
Houston, exactly.
So we're the second.
But still, that's generational poverty that Philadelphia's had that other cities haven't had. And particularly when we're sandwiched in between the most powerful cities in the world, in New York and Washington, D.C., Philadelphia has the opportunity to do something truly special and be the best city, best livable city in America.
I love it. I love it. And so we're going to move to our second big fix idea with you, Catherine Ott-Lovell. It says here, create the Jane Golden Visual Arts School for Social Change. Break it down.
I mean, is it on High Street?
It might be. I love it, Avi. Avi's in. Jane Golden is retiring. And, you know, in like a few weeks.
Decades of service.
42 years of.
Is she really stepping down?
She really is. And it's heartbreaking on a number of levels. For me, she's, you know, that was one of my first jobs here was working under Jane. I joke that I have like an invisible bracelet on my wrist every day. WWJD, what would Jane do? It was an incredibly formative experience for me. And I owe so much of my career and really my commitment to public service to what I witnessed in the 6 years I worked under Jane at Mural Arts. But, you know, I've thought so much about this and it's, you know, it's a huge loss for our city. And I know when people think about the legacy that Jane has left, they often think about the murals, the 4,000 plus murals that have been painted over the past 40 years and this, you know, international renown that this program has brought to our city. When people talk about Philadelphia internationally, they mention the murals, you know, they talk about Rocky and then they mention the murals.
Yes,
and,
of course.
And so I started to think like what is the real legacy? And I think, you know, really Jane would say the murals are great, but the legacy is about how the lives that have been changed. You know, this isn't murals for beauty's sake. These are works of public art that are rooted in social justice and social change, right?
Yeah.
Every single one of them. And so, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a vice president of the home and school, my kids' public school in Philly. And, you know, I couldn't be less artistic, but I birthed an artist. And my kid is in art school, you know, but that same kid did not have visual art programs in her public school after the fourth grade, went to an incredible music school, right? Had, you know, but did not. So we don't have a dedicated public school in the city of Philadelphia dedicated to visual arts. We have schools that are performing arts and we have schools that have visual arts programs, but I think that they're like, you know, Jane is retiring, but her legacy doesn't need to retire. We should work to create the next 10,000 Jane Goldens over the next 50 years. And we can do that by embedding what she lived, you know, what she has spent her whole career creating, which is this idea that art can change lives, art can change communities. And we create a school that is rooted in that, right? And not, again, not just art for art's sake, but art to change our city in all the ways that matter. And so I think modeled on schools like Science Leadership Academy, I've thought a lot about this, modeled on schools like Science Leadership Academy, modeled on schools like Penn Alexander that have a university partner. We partner with an art school, art university or college, and we work with the school district to create a school that lives out those values. We raise external funds because Jane is one of the best fundraisers I've ever worked with. People are going to want to invest in seeing that legacy continue. So we leverage, you know, the school district support with private funds and we create this incredible school.
So you know, it makes me, school? I'm sorry.
I think it could be, I mean, again, thought a lot about this. Yeah. I think I like, my kids go to GAMP, which is a phenomenal school, and I love the model of middle school and high school. I think it's really wonderful. And so I'm thinking 5 through 12.
It's a great idea.
You know, and again, you know, I'm not anti-charter school. You know, I went all through private schools. My kids spent some time in private schools and charter schools. But I do think that, you know, doing this in a Philadelphia public school would be best, you know, so
would kids sort of audition to get in or bring artwork.
Yeah, they could. They could. Yeah. Like that's how the special admission schools work now. You know, you apply and you audition for some of the special admission schools. So it could be that, but it could also be just, you know, many kids don't know that they're artistically talented until they are exposed to it. Look at mural arts program at Greaterford Prison, you know, where these guys in prison learn how to paint murals who never knew they had artistic talent and then come out of prison and leave these incredible, artistic lives. So I think, you know, there's so many ways we could do this. I think the bottom line is that, you know, we need this legacy to continue, and what Jane did here for our city, what she has done, what she will continue to do, this can be her next chapter, leading the school and being part and present in the lives of thousands of young people who can come through it. We are going to create tens of thousands of artists and art activists and social change activists by the year 2076.
Real quick, does Jane Golden know about this idea? Have you spoken with her?
I have talked to Jane about this for 20 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she's like, yeah, you use my name, use the ideas.
She's totally for it.
We are going to get to Harris's final idea. Just want to read a few more comments before we do. Michelle wants you to know, Harris, by the way, there is a city called New Philadelphia in Schuylkill County. So we would have to maybe be newer Philadelphia.
Or
newest Philadelphia. Just, again, we're talking about nomenclature names.
We're workshopping.
Mike from Germantown says the disease that makes us an impoverished city is the failure of our school system. Rich from Center City says it would be great to have a public-private partnership for market and below market rate housing for folks in the city. And David says the biggest thing holding Philadelphia back right now is our draconian tax structure. Remove the BERT tax, stop taxing businesses twice, and switch our property taxes to a land value tax. Once we've made these changes, our city can truly grow and attract more businesses, etc. And now, finally, Harris, as we get ready to wrap up in the last 5 minutes, your second big idea, and it says here, remove, sink, or cover all of the expressways and interstates that engirdle and cross Philadelphia. And Greg's looking for a pound right here. Okay, so
yeah, my wife picked up on the engirdle.
Okay. Yeah, go right ahead. Lay it out.
Wait, we're gonna cover every expressway?
I love it.
Look, this is about the future and envisioning. We've got 50 years to do it, and stuff will change. But unless we sort of put our vision out there, we're not going to get there or even get halfway there. Yeah. So how do we kind of start to reach the vision that both Catherine and Greg have really sort of espoused in terms of cities that are humane, cities that are welcoming? Mm-hmm. Cars don't welcome people. Mm-hmm. Cars don't make cities appealing. Yes, they're necessary, and I have a car, and I love my car. But in order for a city to be truly kind of next generation and to last the next 50, 100, 150 years, we have to kind of get rid of this really sort of a remnant of the Eisenhower era. Mm. Highways are not that – I mean, we've had highways and turnpikes that back to the Revolution. But the love affair and dependence on these arteries is really a fairly recent –
phenomenon. You'd like us to do, so they would cap them? How would these be covered?
You've heard about the Big Dig in Boston. Mm-hmm. I know that's somewhat of a bad name, but it went on for a long time, but it took down what was called the Green Monster, and they put it underground. That's a fairly concise way of
dollars.
Yeah. It cost $15 billion at the time, which is now pocket change. Yeah. But highways have built-in obsolescence. We have to rebuild them every 50 years. Right. Are we going to rebuild them in kind, or are we going to make them bigger, or are we going to start to shrink them, put them underground? And
would all of I-95 be a tunnel?
I-95 will go onto Roosevelt Boulevard and become high-speed railway.
Ah.
So, I mean, it has to be a combination of modes, and it's not going to be immediate, right? Yep. You know, everyone's going to freak out. But if you want to get to the Delaware River, you have to now kind of snake your way, for the most part, under I-95, over I-95. There's no reason for that.
Yeah. So this is going to be in stages, a long-term plan to cover and cap basically all the major highways that run through kind of greater center cities, is what I'm sort of hearing.
Think of the Schuylkill Expressway.
Yeah.
They took out 400 acres of parkland to build an expressway.
Right.
I mean, that's rape of the landscape, excuse me. So how do we begin to repair that?
Yeah. But do you think the roads will still exist in some form, even in
I mean, again, we have to kind of plan this. We have to figure it out. Public has to be involved.
Some air travel at that point, so we won't necessarily be on the ground. But I think what we were looking at Philadelphia 50 years ago is how are you going through Philadelphia as opposed to Philadelphia. And so a lot of the road networks that we're looking at is what brings you to the place rather
or
than
instead of just zipping through it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the mindset shift
that I think you should be considering.
Yeah, I mean,
talking
the expressway is basically facilitated white flight. Yeah. It's really getting people out of this city.
Yeah. Right. And since as we get ready to wrap up, I want to sort of, how do we get the mindset of people, you know, to think 50 years from now, to sort of get to a place where we dream big enough to really start building a city that we can be proud of, that our children can be proud of, and the grandchildren can be proud of. So what is your advice sort of as we wrap up to get even getting our mindset open enough to start thinking 50 years from now?
I think it's hard, right? And I think it goes back to that frame of scarcity that we're always coming from. I know when we started the Rebuild Initiative when I was at Parks and Rec, and we would go to people and ask them to re-envision their park or playground, and we'd like, all right, think big, big vision for what this could look like. And they'd be like, okay, can we get trash cans? I'd like a picnic bench, you know? And we're like, well, we're thinking a little bigger. And so what we did was we put everybody on a bus, and we took literally like a whole bus of community leaders up to New York City to see these cutting edge playgrounds that were being built. And on the way home, the conversation completely shifted. And so I think we've got to, you know, Greg brought up Barcelona. I think we've got to be putting in front of people more examples of other cities around the world that are doing exactly what we're talking about, right? We've got to help people visualize and aspire. When you come from this frame of scarcity, you lose your ability to aspire, right? And
so
we've got to get that back.
And quickly, Greg and then Harris, your thoughts on how we open our minds up to even dream big enough for 50 years from now.
Yeah, and I tend to be a person that kind of think big, act locally. And so when you paint the picture, it's easier for, when you already have a picture that you've painted that people can buy into, it's easier to now form a plan to get there. Now, what happens here is we tend to think from the front rather than from the end. And so how do we solve the trash problem? How do we fix that road? How do we fill that pothole? As opposed to, where should Philadelphia be in 50 years,
and
how do we get there? And then back your way. I'm an engineer by training, so I can. That's the way that I think, anyway.
When I was asked to lead the planning process for the Central Delaware 2006-2007, 7 miles of water for an 1,100 acres of basically industrial land. The goal was to how do we kind of get over the false starts of redeveloping, particularly Penn's Landing and these kind of the vast tracts of land. We did what Catherine said they did for Rebuild. We took people up to New York. We brought people in from other cities. We began to kind of expand people's imagination of what a Philadelphia waterfront could be. We hosted over 4,000 people in public meetings and gained input into those kind of ideas. And then ultimately that became a vision that is now being implemented.
Yep. So we got to do that again.
But you have to put that out there and work your way towards it.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you're going to never know where you're going.
Well, let me thank our guest today. That was a lovely conversation. Harris Steinberg, former founding executive director of the Lindy Institute for Urban Innovation at Drexel, Catherine Ott Lovell, president and CEO of the Philadelphia Visitor Center, and Gregory Reeves, CEO and co-founder of Mosaic Development Partners. It was a pleasure, everybody.
Let's do it again.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Today's show was produced by Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryan, and Paige Marie Bessler. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks, Charlie Kyer, and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philly. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks for joining us this hour. And don't go anywhere because we'll be back after a short break with a special 1 p.m. edition of Studio 2. To celebrate America's 250th birthday, we've been traveling all over the region learning about our rich revolutionary history. So don't go anywhere.